They decided, because the new area is a complete Spanish ward, so. We don't get luck in them, they crawl around them.
And they get popcorn.
Getting their office list ready, finding place for all their staff.
Just doing this for right now, but it's fine.
Well, I told Jana, thanks for printing it, because I'm gonna.
It's a lot of crazy details, I would never have thought. You have to find them a bunker, hide it, and get one.
I see two of them all you know, so.
They have to have like backup plans, just in case. All right, hi, Archie. Good afternoon, and welcome. The Morgan County Board of Education work meeting is called to order. And right off the bat, I would really like to express our thanks and our welcome to all of our community council members. We see some new faces, and we're so grateful that you're agreeing to do what you're doing in your children's schools, and thanks for being here. And we're gonna have just, if you'll indulge us, just 5 minutes of review of some of our board training, and then I'd like to have our community council members introduce themselves and which school you're affiliated with, and then we have a wonderful trainer here to be with us today. Okay, so before I take that couple of minutes, we have a couple of announcements. Member Therese has a very special event tonight, so she has to leave our regular meeting a few minutes early. She has an event with her son and family tonight, so we'll excuse her. And then Member Brooks has an announcement for us from USBA.
Let me do that now?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, goodness. Okay, I just wanted to share with the board, Julie Jackson, who's the current USBA Vice President, that would be in position to take over President in January. She won her seat for the State House, and so she's actually running. She won the primary, so she's running unopposed in November, so she has the position. So she put in her resignation as USBA Vice President. And so how that works, we have our meeting on Friday, Board of Directors meeting, and so we're taking applications from the Board of Directors from a single region board member, because that's what it's a single region term. So anyone interested in that, so we will be filling that position at our meeting on Friday, and then I think we'll go for vote in January at the conference or whatever. But I just wanted to make you guys aware of that change happening and the leadership.
Which region is up?
She's from Granite, maybe?
Yeah, she was.
Just has to be
Granite, so it has to replace hers.
Yeah. So she won her House representative, and then Linda Hanks, who's a former leadership, she's going to be on the State Board of Education. So that's two school board members that are moving on to state positions with this year's election cycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice. Thank you. Okay, just our quick little, I wanted to review just a couple of things. It's been June since we met, and our training in June was what governing boards need to know about special education. And this is our follow-up to see if we remember what we learned. And no pressure here. But there were two main roles that we as school board members have for special education. And the grand prize winner, if anyone remembers those two things, or even one of those two things, and I'll give you a clue. One begins with A and one begins with R. Okay.
I already flipped back, sorry. I'll excuse myself.
Anyway, advocacy. We are advocates. That's one of our major responsibilities for our special education population. And the other one is response. And there are many avenues for that, but just remember those two things. And then as we are interacting with our constituents, there was a little acronym that helps us to remember our responsibility there, and that one was RAP. So we have advocacy and response are our two main responsibilities, and then we want to remember RAP. Anybody remember any of those? Yeah, that's why we're reviewing, because I had to go back and peek. I didn't remember either. So reflect. When someone gives us information, we're just listening and reflecting on that. Assure them that we can direct them to a place where they can have the help they need, and then the P is propose, which, yeah, we again make that clear with them that we'll be with them in that process of leading them to the right people, and some suggestions. Okay, so that was from June, and then the second other little thing comes from our Dignity Index training, and I get monthly updates in my email. I don't know if any of you guys do as well. But I had one this month that mentioned a couple of weeks ago, the National Governors Association announced a major new initiative that they are going to be proceeding with for this coming year, and that initiative is the Center for Dignity in Politics. And their mission is basically to invite all political leaders to reflect on the question, how do I treat others when I disagree? So I'm just throwing that out and asking each of us, because we've had that little training too, and just asking each of us to reflect on that question and to continue to be leaders in the area of modeling that ability to treat others and to treat everyone with dignity, and especially those with whom we disagree. So that's just our little board training review, and we'll move on now to our Trustland training. But before I turn the time over to Marcus Chen from the State Board, if you are a community council rep, would you please stand and just introduce yourselves, and everybody can stand at once, and then you can sit down just as soon as you've told us who you are and what school you represent. And we'll start in the front right here.
Steve Corey, Morgan Middle School, and this is my third year.
Thank you, Steve.
Bill Caldwell, Morgan Middle School, my second year.
Thank you.
Michelle Stocking, Mountain Green Middle School. I want to say my fourth or fifth year? I'm not sure.
Perfect, thanks.
Lucia Lawler, and I'm at Mountain Green Elementary School, and I think this is maybe my sixth year. I mean, long time.
Jake Johansson with Morgan Elementary School in St. Iowa, somewhere in there. Four or five, somewhere.
Thank you.
Seth Smith, Morgan Middle School. It's my first year. Sorry for being a couple minutes late.
Thank you. And you know what? I love to hear that. I love that we have some veterans that have been there that have a little bit of experience how the things run. And I love that we have brand new people saying yes to this. So our training now, I'll turn the time over to Marcus Chen, and Marcus, take it away, and we'll listen and learn.
Great to be here. I guess that's that annual time, so I usually start with, you know, year three and seeing some familiar faces. Some of the principals here have started with me, so it's been good to see you guys. Just a little bit about me. I'm starting my third year with the Land Trust Program at the State Board. Previously, before that, I was a middle school science teacher, about 10 years in Canyons District down in Salt Lake Valley, and then been with the State Board for about 3 years there. So it's good to see you guys today. I'm going to be talking mostly to council chairs, but kind of at the same time, what I'm going to be doing is kind of talk about school board member responsibilities as well. So you'll kind of see them side by side and kind of see how the two support each other. And also kind of sprinkle in there as principals and how you guys kind of are involved in the program as well. If you would like to follow along, here's your chance to scan that QR code there. I know these become kind of a guidebook during the year, so feel free to take a moment there to scan it. I'm also going to be highlighting some new resources that our office has kind of put together, so hopefully that'll be helpful for you guys. And these resources are really for council chairs, they're really for school board members, and especially for our district principals as well. So, and if you're just a fan of scanning QR code, a little bit of fun for you guys. Yes. Let's see, we got, it looks like most people got it there. Good. Okay, perfect. Let's jump in here. So, hot off the press, today you might have seen an email from me releasing our district principal training course. So what we're moving towards is having a few resources available on Canvas. We know that most districts are kind of moving towards instructure and having that available to them, to the schools. So what we've done is this is one option in which principals can complete their annual training. And we are planning on releasing courses for school board members, as well as council members, district liaisons, the whole, all stakeholders in our program. So you'll have a reference to kind of go back to during the year. And it just goes through the whole entire program, the different requirements. So for district principals, there are 5 modules that kind of go through the whole entire program and different requirements. It is a click-through based training, so principals, as you're going through it, there isn't a talking head or anything. It just becomes kind of a guidebook that you can use throughout the year. So that's available to you guys. That should have gone to your inbox. If it hasn't, let me know. I'm happy to send that link to you guys directly. Another resource that might be helpful during the year is our informational website. And so when you log on to School Land Trust, our public website, there is a button here that says training materials. And I can give you guys a little bit of a demo here, but when you go to our website, there are a few buttons here. Hopefully you guys can see that, okay? A couple things to consider. One is if you'd like to schedule training, we do have this portal now that is tied to the State Board of Education. So if the principal wants me to come talk to your council specifically, you can book me through this portal that's run by the State Board. Or you can email me, and I'm happy to kind of go through that portal and book it on your behalf. Another thing that kind of becomes an important resource is our training resources page, where we've kind of organized all the different guides for the different things we're going to talk about today. So things like a timeline for your different stakeholders, or information about rules of order and procedure. All that's organized in our training materials page. And so this can become a resource for councils if you need more information on these requirements. That's available on our website as well. So those are some of the resources to kind of keep in mind as you're going through the year. It also just becomes kind of a space where, you know, oh, I remember Marcus said this one thing in a training. You can go back to these training materials and it's there for you. So, and also, I got my card, so if you prefer an email or just call me, I'm happy to do that as well. So, lots of options there, and hopefully that's been helpful for principals last year as well. So let's jump into the actual work of councils. So I spent the summer at 3 different conferences, and it's funny how, you know, you go to these different conferences and the same questions kind of come up each time. They say, what is the School Land Trust program all about? So this is kind of the statement I go back to. If you have stakeholders at your schools that are interested in the council work, they don't really know what it is, this might be something that you can utilize. And so I usually say that Utah Public Schools implement the School Land Trust program to enhance classroom instruction and improve student achievement in areas of greatest academic need. So as we go through the different requirements today, I'm hoping that we can all keep this in mind, because the different requirements do kind of tie back to this statement, right? Is that the council work is really ultimately about enhancing classroom instruction and targeting those really critical academic needs at your schools. And so those of you who are veterans in the programs hopefully seen that change over time, right? That the council work does really target those areas. And those that are new, you'll start to see that, you know, as you meet with your council, the discussions are really based around that data. So let's jump right into some of the numbers here. So this year we're slated to distribute about $133.5 million. About 835,000 is going to Morgan District this year. So we're seeing a continual increase in the fund. And we'll continue, hopefully continue to see that in future years. And so today, what we really want to talk about is council work and your responsibilities as council chairs have been elected yet, or is it just members right now?
Just members.
I'm seeing just members. Okay, perfect. So we'll be going over those responsibilities for those councils. Interwoven into the presentation, we will be talking directly to board members and how you guys kind of support that process. And how maybe some best practices that I've kind of gathered from different districts throughout the state and that might be helpful to implement here in Morgan. So what are school committee councils? First thing to consider is that school committee councils are really designed to involve parents in decision-making at the school. I would also extend this to say that it's not just parents, but it's also different stakeholders like your school employees, your school board members as you attend those meetings, right? And your principals as well. So it's kind of this intersection of a lot of different stakeholders at the schools. The second purpose is to improve the education of students, so that's that enhancing classroom instruction piece. And you're also collaborating in a way that's going to prepare a plan that's going to be centered around the use of school land trust funds for the next academic year. So your council is implementing the plan from last year currently, and you guys will be going into next year's plan sometime in the winter and the spring here. Another thing that kind of gets glossed over sometimes, but something that we do want to kind of touch, is that the councils are responsible for public awareness of the funds. So oftentimes, you know, we see that, you know, parent involvement is usually tied to very active councils. And so when I go to a conference and a teacher or a parent hasn't heard of school land trust funds or not really familiar with it, it's usually because the council itself hasn't been super active in communicating with that. So one of the things that you do want to consider, just making sure that you're having those conversations, whether it's, you know, at a parent event, walking with other parents from school or to school, those small things go a long way in increasing those parent involvement things. So something to kind of consider as you guys go forward, trying to get more parent involvement in your councils. As a council member, you do have some responsibilities that are protected by a state mandate. You have the ability to advise and make recommendations on different things such as district initiatives, the positive behavior plan, the teacher-student success plan, child access routing, and school breakfast. This is all in state statute. And so you as a council do have kind of an extended reach as well. You can kind of make recommendations on these different things that are there. But a big chunk of your work is really going to be not only on these, different initiatives, but it's really going to be about the school land trust plan and being part of this first part, which is the data review. If you've been part of school committee council meetings, you've probably seen a lot of data at your meetings, discussing what the data shows, but also, is your plan working, right? Your data is going to really drive that discussion there. So a huge part of your council work and responsibility is going to be being part of those discussions, being part of reviewing the academic success, and also identifying what are those things that our students really need support in, and how can we help using those funds. That's really kind of one of the big things there in terms of council work. You're also going to be in charge of really determining how you're going to be using that funding in collaboration with your principals as well as your school board members. And so it's really a really big conversation. One of the things I really love about this program is as a teacher, you're usually on like a leadership team, kind of isolated from different stakeholders, whereas community councils, you kind of have this interaction of principal and teacher and parent all in the same place. So to have those three stakeholders who are involved in students' lives having discussions about their success, that's a really powerful thing. So we do want to kind of highlight that as one of your main responsibilities as a council member. To kind of help guide that, there is a resource here that is a timeline not just for principals but also for council members. And what I've recommended to council chairs is to really use this timeline as a way of guiding your agenda for each council meeting. One of the top questions I get at conferences from council chairs is, how do I run a meeting? How do I run an agenda? And if you're in education, it just kind of becomes second nature, right? You just type it out, it's there, right? But oftentimes what we do need some guidelines, and so this calendar or this timeline can be a helpful resource there for you. And looking at timelines, there are really four major points that you and your council really need to keep in mind. One is coming up, you guys start school next week, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. So we're right there in that first kind of bullet point there for your current plan implementation. So your council's worked to create that plan for this year's implementation. You'll start to see that implementation in August. And then October 20th is when you'll see it's kind of your first reporting deadline. By then, it looks like Morgan's kind of ahead of the game. You guys have your councils in place. And so a lot of that is centered around putting your councils together. So 10,000 points to Morgan districts. A couple other things to kind of keep in mind. This is really for principals and for board members. It's making sure that you do have the final reports ready for submission on March 1st. And then May 15th. I apologize. There, May 15th is your upcoming plan and district assurance there. Today, what I'm going to kind of concentrate on is mostly that front half of the year. And then what I usually recommend to districts is, you know, book another training with me towards the spring or towards when you start plan writing. And I'm happy to kind of provide more training that way as well. Any questions about your responsibilities as council members, or maybe board members have questions here? Perfect. Yeah. Let's jump into some of the requirements for councils. So these are both standard council structures. So if you're a high school council, you'll have 10 members. If you're a middle or elementary school, you'll have 6 members here. Three things to kind of keep in mind as you enter your first kind of month as a council is really to make sure that your rules of order and procedure, that document that kind of guides your operation as a council, has the exact membership of the council stated in there. And the reason why we have that is because, one, it's transparency, it's communicating, you know, what the council looks like. But also, number two, it does protect you as a council to show, you know, maybe there's some discrepancies about how the council was formed. Your rules of order and procedure really become a protecting document and showing, hey, this is how we formed the council, this is how the council does its business. So maybe your first meeting back, if you haven't already, is looking at your rules of order and procedure and saying, hey, let's revise those, let's make sure that's up to code, and move on from there. Yes?
Are those 10 and 6 guideline recommendations, and the council can deviate from that in rules?
That's correct. So so I guess we can jump to 3 here, is if the school decides, hey, you know what, we don't really need 10, but we can use more, then you can adjust that. You just have to make sure that the council votes on that adjustment beforehand. So, good question there. The other thing to kind of keep in mind is, regardless of your council structure, it does need to have that two-parent majority. So, just make sure that you have that stated in the rules as well. Questions? Yes?
This structure here does not include the principal, right? The 2 employees are outside of the principal?
So the 2 employees does include the principal there, so you just need 1 additional school employee in there. So that is also a good plug for principals. You are a voting member, so just make sure you count yourself that in your whatever roster you report, that you are a voting member. Yeah.
Interesting.
Questions? Going to how school board members can support this implementation here. One is just making sure that you're looking at your school's rules of order and procedure. So as you kind of work with or you attend those meetings, you know, take a look at them and make sure, hey, you know, does this kind of match up with what's expected from the code? And also we do have rubrics and resources on our website to kind of check that as well. So whether you're a board member or a principal or a council member, there are resources for you to kind of look at those things. Another thing to kind of keep in mind is just communication. One thing that we see is that when school board members are communicating regularly with their councils, that's when they know when deadlines are, that's when they know when to report things. But they're also getting communication about your priorities as a board, right? And so that communication becomes really important, because when it comes to plan writing time, they're able to align those plans to your district board initiatives. So something to keep in mind as you guys
Marcus.
Attend meetings, yes.
Just a comment there,
sure.
Because I want to make sure that we have a clarification there. That communication can be through the building principal, from us to the building principal, right? It's not that we have to directly
sure.
tell them, but that communication, we can communicate with the principals that can then say, oh, these are board goals for the 26-27 year.
Yep, sure.
Okay.
That can be one way. We've also seen some districts kind of have board members attend meetings and kind of cycle through them.
We do that. We attend meetings.
That's another 10,000 points there. So, so that's perfect. I think, you know, when you have those two things kind of working together, you know, you're working at a good place. So, yeah.
I have a question on that.
Sure.
Not for you, Marcus.
Oh. I'll stand right here. You guys.
Do we rotate which school with the calendar year or with the school year? Like, are we rotating now or with the calendar?
The calendar year.
According to
Yeah, because we'll keep our same school until December and then we change again.
I'm glad you guys have that conversation.
Just gave you time for a drink, right?
No, that's what I asked. It's all part of the plan. Great. A couple other things to kind of consider too is making sure that your district liaison, so I believe that's Andy and Scott, making sure that you're also communicating with them on those timeline things as well as due dates. You as a board decide that due date for your plans, and so just making sure you're communicating with them helps a huge amount. And then also making sure that we were talking about this, communication with your councils, providing feedback, those things become pretty important throughout the year. As a council chair, so we don't have council chairs yet, but something to kind of consider as you move towards that in your first meeting is really your council chair in collaboration with the principal is the one who's setting the agenda. The reason why I kind of hover around this this bullet point for a little longer is because it is becoming a huge part of the council operation. Oftentimes, maybe if you've been in the program long enough, you see that a discussion kind of like goes off the rails and kind of goes into this whole thing about you don't even know what it was before, right? and so one thing to kind of do is, you know, as a council chair, work with your principals to create that agenda and use that as your guideline and as your kind of, you know, your railroad tracks for how you're going to set the conversation there. And what we've seen is that when that does happen, that does give the council chair the ability to say in the middle of the meeting, hey, I understand this concern, but let's table this for next time and let's make that part of discussion for a future meeting. That's one way you can kind of resolve that issue. The other thing you can kind of consider is also using your council to form subcommittees where that person who's really passionate about that one academic thing, use that subcommittee to research or to investigate that thing and report back to the council. So it saves and preserves that council meeting time, but it also gives that person kind of responsibility and the ownership of that thing. So something to kind of consider as you guys navigate those things. That surprisingly happens a lot from what I've been in conversation with parents and with principals. So something to kind of keep in mind there. I'm seeing some head nods too, so I'm imagining it happens. Right? a couple other things to kind of consider as your council chair. One is to make sure that you're also informing council members about the resources that are available. So that first slide about my website or about the public website. Always direct them towards that. That's how we avoid confusion about requirements, and we want to make sure that you guys are getting the right information as well. So it's right there for you. Other things to kind of consider as a council chair is, like I said before, is community participation, right? You as a council chair and you as a council member can really get these other people involved, your school board members, your teachers, even students. You can have students speak at these community council meetings and report on what's working in their classes, right? You probably have student leadership positions that are available there. That's one thing that we've seen councils do that's really, I think, awesome part of the discussion. You could have teachers discuss implementation of successful programs. You could have teachers discuss what are the things they're seeing in the data that might need attention. You can even have your board members come and say, hey, can you come speak on this initiative and what you expect for us as a council? Those types of conversations can be really helpful for councils, but also makes that monthly meeting pretty important or pretty valuable. So something to kind of consider as you move forward. A couple other things. You as a council chair do prepare the agenda, but you also prepare kind of an annual timeline for those agendas. That calendar that we covered at the beginning can be a helpful tool for that. You're also making assignments for your other council members, so you can delegate to other council members and say, hey, can you look into this, or can you complete this assignment for us? And also, as a council chair, you're making sure that the rules of our procedure is available for your council at each meeting. That just gives you a guidebook on how to navigate that discussion in that meeting. Questions about council chair or council work here? Yeah, go ahead.
I'm not quite sure how to word it, so I'm going to think it out loud as I say it, but I'm wondering if you can maybe give an example of how this can look better, because I love, like, as a council chair, I would love to be able to take some of the burden off the principal of preparing the agenda, so obviously your website, but also, like, what you mean by how we can help delegate some of these responsibilities, so all the responsibility doesn't fall on the principal and the chair at each meeting.
Sure. So some of those things, it could be as simply as, you know, if you have like a secretary for the council, like the note taker, that's one thing. Oftentimes I've seen council chairs like do all of that. That doesn't necessarily have to be just you. Other things, it could be like those formed of subcommittees. The chairs don't have to be on those subcommittees, so you can kind of delegate work through those pathways. You wouldn't be able to delegate things like the reporting requirements. That's really the principal's responsibility. But I would leave that up to the council and how you want to navigate that. There isn't like a specific rule for how that happens there. So, and I'm always happy to kind of, you know, kind of mull over some ideas too. So if you do get one, I'm happy to kind of sit there and talk about that. Other questions? Does that kind of help you give the starting point?
Yeah, I'm also still kind of wondering how should it look between the chair and the principal? Like, not that it hasn't, I feel like a lot of the burden falls on the principal more than the chair in the past.
Sure.
And I'm wondering, is that how it should look? Should, as a chair, should I be doing more?
I'm trying to navigate this. I think there is a lot of responsibility for principals. I think principals in the room know that the reporting, even looking into your council membership structure, right? Communicating with me, seeing my feedback on plans, like there's a lot of responsibility, and those things don't change. But I think if there's things as you're meeting with your principal and you say, hey, you know, as we prepare for this next meeting, if you can delegate and kind of split up the work that way, that's something to kind of consider. But in terms of like reporting and those things, we can really change those. But that really falls on me. So, you know, principals, you can yell at me via email if you wish, or, you know, feeling the need to, or board members too.
I think sometimes though, I've had really awesome council chairs where we've actually met beforehand or even after the meeting and talked over agenda and stuff like that. And I found that when we did those type of things, there were so many, it just went a lot smoother. But I've also had really good luck at having amazing council chairs. And so we've looked at data and talked about stuff and then go into that meeting and present, and they've really taken an active role in that, in their responsibilities. And so, but I think you can do some work too, talking about data and communicating those things. So, and it's really helpful.
Take my job. Awesome. I'll be bringing Luke to all my other trainings. Let's move into some other of the specifics. So as a council, you do have your rules of order and procedure. That's really the document that's going to guide how you conduct that council business from month to month. It does outline some things like ethical behavior, it talks about civil discourse, and it also covers open public meetings. And what we're going to do later on in today's presentation is talk about open public meetings, what are some of those requirements and reporting, and what you need to do as a council to make sure that they are up to code. But your rules of our procedure specifically kind of outline these eight things. And these eight things are really just communicating how the council does its business and how the council is formed. And so if you wanted to join a council, your rules of our procedure really become a communication point too, and saying, hey, if you want to be part of our council, this is how we do it, right? If a council member or someone who's in the public says, man, I'm not really sure about like council work and what it does, these documents actually have kind of an interesting effect in how they can communicate how the council does its business. So we do have a template that's on our website, so if you are looking to update that, I know you guys have that on each school website, so maybe as a board member that might be a good thing to look at, say, go to each school website and say, you know, does the rules of order procedure have the sections here? The reason why I bring this up too is this point here where we talk about member removal and replacing members. In the last 2 weeks, I've fielded 3 questions based on those 2 points there. So as a council, it is really important to have that in place. So if you have a member that doesn't show up, right, and they have been absent for 6 months, right, but you don't have that outlined in your rules and rule procedure, it does make it difficult to remove that person, which has an effect on council vote, right? So just be aware of that. It also should outline how to replace members. So whether by appointment process, we do have some districts that decide to do like a runoff election. If you want to do that, you can do that as well. But this is really your document to show how you form the council and communicate that. There are also some other things that we suggest based on conversations that we've had with principals and with parents across the state. Things like, how do you address public comment, right? How do you address agenda items? So that point about the principal and council chair collaboration, that can be outlined in your rules of order and procedure. One thing to keep in mind too is this could also outline how you handle electronic meetings. This is a good reminder to say that email voting is not allowed in program rule, but if you want to meet like in a hybrid format, so online plus in person, that could be outlined in your rules of order and procedure as well. And then also leaving space for you guys. There's other challenges that might be addressed. So if it's like that subcommittee formation, that's something you can integrate into your rules of order procedure there. Another thing that is optional is Robert's Rules of Order, so motioning and seconding and that type of thing for council items. You can also outline that in your rules of order procedure as well. To help with that, just a good plug for our website. We do have a guide that shows kind of, you know, different parts, but we also provided, Kira, our compliance specialist, has also provided a template for you guys. So it doesn't have to be something that you just like create out of nothing, right? You guys can go to the template and reformat it in a way that works for you guys. This also is a good plug for school board members. You can use the guides that we provide as a checklist. So if you're doing that annual review or you're doing that review, you know, use that guide as a checklist. Say, okay, does this school have this part? Does it have this part? And so on. Cool. All right. A couple things about open public meetings. School community council meetings are open and public. And a couple of things to kind of keep in mind as you move forward with them. One is to make sure that it's obviously open to the public, and you're not able to close any part of the meeting. So this is standard rule for community council meetings. A couple things about notices is making sure that the notices show up on the school website at least 1 week prior to the meeting, right? So making sure that, you know, if you have a community member that's really concerned about reading scores, they should be able to know, one, where is the meeting going to be held, what time is it going to be held, and also the location of that meeting. This is also to say if your school decides to do an electronic meeting, so in like a Zoom or some type of electronic format, the link should be posted on the school website. So just make sure that's there. There was one instance where I was trying to get onto a council meeting, they didn't have the link, and so I had to do the old 5-minute scramble and email my contact there. So something to think about as you guys are moving forward there. A couple other things, also making sure that you post your agenda. That's part of the requirements there. So it could just be a simple bulleted list of what's going to be discussed, and you should also have the minutes from the previous, or at least draft minutes of the previous meeting there as well. For your agendas, like I said, this has to be posted at least 1 week before the actual meeting, and it should have enough information to show what's going to be discussed, as well as what's going to be voted on. So I'm going to show you guys an example here, and then we'll go back to the minutes. Here's a school in Iron County. A couple things that they have that's great, they have the date and time, but it also needs the location. This school actually uses an online link, and so this is something to kind of keep in mind as you're moving forward, is making sure that all that information is there for people so they can, they can attend. You should also have a roster of voting members, so those that are present. And also, one thing that's helpful for me on my end is making sure that you also put visitors, so you get guest speakers or people who aren't part of the council or who are non-voting members. You should clearly identify those people on the agenda. The reason why that's important is sometimes I do have to go in and check the council vote results for your plan. This becomes one less step of me trying to communicate with you guys and look at your minutes to, oh, this is the council vote, I know what you're trying to say. So, something to kind of keep in mind there. They also do a good job of putting on what items were voted on, so what are action items on the agenda, as well as what are discussion points, so things that aren't voted on but were discussed by the council. And one thing to kind of also, that I kind of like about this agenda here is that it also has some helpful directions for council members. So if there's like a motion that needs to be part of the council meeting or it requires a vote, that's highlighted in this agenda, so it becomes a really good guideline for those who are attending. Question about agendas. This usually becomes a big talking point here. A couple other things with meeting minutes. Those must be kept at the school on record for, so it's a school's responsibility to keep those meeting minutes for 3 years. Most often what we see is that schools use their agenda and just fill in the details and use that as the minutes. So don't make two separate things. Use one thing and kind of, you know, use it up as you can go with it. So meeting minutes, you need to have all that central information of who was in attendance, who was absent, and also any voting records there. Questions about meeting materials? And we're good on time there. Okay. A couple of things too that kind of get glossed over sometimes when we talk about meetings. One is to make sure that a majority must be present at the meeting to conduct business. This is part of that open and public meeting rule that's part of our program, so making sure that's apparent. And then also making sure that a majority is required for councils to take action on meeting items. So this is a good clarification. Some people say, you know, does there have to be a two-parent majority at every meeting? That's not the case, right? Two-parent majority is just for that council membership structure. The majority just has to be present for the council. So if it's like a six-member council, you just need four people there to address your, or to do your meeting.
If you're doing a blended meeting where you're doing both online and in person, mm-hmm. Is there a certain amount that has to be there in person in order for it to be considered a majority?
Nope. So if you do disclose that it's a hybrid format, and if the person online is present, right, and the person in person is present, that would count towards your. So just kind of keep that in mind as you're moving forward. And this also becomes an important thing. I've had several districts talk to me about how one member has not shown up for several months, and that actually has prevented them from having a quorum, and they can't vote on anything, right? So going back to the rules of form procedure and having that removal process, that does become really important. So something to kind of consider as you're moving forward, as you're looking for that majority. If there are members who are not present for a long time, make sure you have a process to remove them. Okay. Other meeting considerations, this is really for board members here, is making sure that your councils have up-to-date budget communications. That's going to become a really important part, especially during plan writing season, is making sure that they have those up-to-date numbers. Also, throughout the year, making sure that they have, you know, those numbers that show how much they're spending, because if they're underspending, you'll want that information so you can put it in your amendment so you avoid that excessive carryover penalty there. So we're gonna make sure that that communication's there. One other thing kind of keep in mind too is the final report, when they are submitted on March 1st, you as a board are gonna receive a summary or a copy of those reports, but also parents at the school must receive that report as well. And that can just be done through a link on your website. It doesn't have to be a whole additional thing. It could just be a link to our public reports page showing the final report. So, principals, if you have questions about that department, talk to me. I'm happy to kind of talk through that. Another way that we see districts kind of navigate that is also an email or a newsletter that shows what the community council is doing. That's another way you guys can trust that department. Yeah.
that all parents in the school, or is that just parent members of the council?
It's all parents in the school. Another thing to kind of consider as you are meeting together frequently throughout the year is the thing about talking about plan implementation, right? Having those guest speakers like teachers who are receiving funds, have them talk about those math manipulatives that you're using in those classrooms, right? Or have a reading teacher talk about that reading group, or have a paraprofessional talk about their experience as a person in the classroom. Those conversations become a really important part of your meetings. It can also help your council make decisions as you move forward on how to use those funds later on. As a school board, communication, that's going to be the common thing, right? Making sure you have that budget communication, communicating about initiatives. Maybe there's changes or things that you're seeing from the district level. You should also communicate those things to your principals. Make sure everyone's on the same page there. Cool. All right. A couple things. As a school board member, you do have the ability to kind of help your councils make sure that they have everything in place. And so one thing that you could potentially consider using is a compliance monitoring system where you're doing sample selection instead of looking at each school individually. So this system does not replace, your procedures for your plans. But this could be a way in which you look at school websites. It could be a way in which you look at rules of order procedure. It could also be a way that you look at council membership, right? So having a sample selection might be an effective way. And so one way that it could be done is making sure that maybe not all your schools are being checked for rules of order procedure, and maybe a few of them are, right? And you can use that sample size to identify, okay, if there's problems in these schools, then we should probably look at the other ones and make an assessment on, are there rules of order and procedure, or are there other requirements that need to be addressed
there? Is there a minimum sample size?
So general rule is really, that's really up to you as a board, right, what you're most comfortable with. Being a smaller, five schools, right?
Yeah, five schools, five members, we're okay with,
sure.
Yeah.
So that might be, that kind of answer, yeah.
Everybody gets checked, right?
Yeah. Unless one of I would say
we'll just check with someone.
I'm just gonna leave it. A couple things is, one important thing is once you have identified that risk, make sure you act on it, right? So if you do see that maybe there's rules of order procedure that are not in compliance, making sure you communicate that to the principals, but also making sure you're providing those resources so that becomes a communication with me. So if I get an email from Andy saying, hey, we need support in this, then the process is doing its work, right? Compliance monitoring shouldn't be really about gotcha, but that's not what we're trying to intend here. It's just, are we operating the way that we should be and making sure that it's, up to code. Questions about compliance monitoring? With the last couple minutes here, I do want to cover kind of the big cornerstone of the program. You as a council will be discussing all those different initiatives at your council meetings, but really a big chunk of your work is going to be that data review and also that that conversation about how are we going to use school land trust funds to support classroom instruction here. So a couple things to kind of consider as you go through the development process. One is making sure that it's really centered on data. And making sure that you're asking your teachers, you're asking your department leads for that data that's available to them. You're also using that data to identify the greatest academic needs. And you're also using district initiatives from your school board members to make that decision. Once you identify those academic needs, you're going to be creating goals that really answer the question, where do you want your students to be in one academic year? And then also making decisions on what supports are going to be. And so the reason why I put this kind of four-part process up here is because, one, if you've been on the council for long enough, you know that sometimes the conversation starts with, oh, I heard about this cool new thing in education. We should put it in our schools, right? And so really centering your conversation on the data becomes a really important part because, number one, that cool new thing might not actually be the most effective thing that's going to address your greatest academic need. So that's really up to you as a council. That's why you vote as a council, but that's why you also have this discussion throughout the year. So something to kind of consider as you're meeting throughout the year. what data should councils use? One, it should be really tied to a specific academic area. It should also show measurable success, so it should be really data-oriented and show progress. And this could be a summative or formative assessment. It can also be data trends over time. So if you don't have that current data available, so like last year's Rise School, right? Our program has no problem with you guys using trends from last year or the year before to make those decisions there. So you as a principal or you as a council chair, you can get creative on how you look at that data and use that to kind of inform your discussion throughout the year. Question.
Is it often that you see in these community councils that they focus on more than one academic area at a time, or is it usually that they focus solely on one academic area?
I'm going to put you guys in the spot. What do you guys usually see at your schools? Do you guys usually focus on one goal or multiple goals?
Multiple
goals.
I think most of our schools have multiple goals.
Yeah, so I think it really is up to the council itself. We see some schools kind of target just one thing, but also there's no cap on how many goals you can have as part of your
market. This is kind of a tangent to that. The other thing I've observed is the dollar amounts that are going through this program are dramatically higher than they were 10 years ago. Right? When this was 10 years ago, it was like, oh, well, we could buy a few supplies with this, right? And now it's like, we could hire multiple teachers. Right? So the scale of what Trustlands can do is very different than it was. And so that allows the councils to do different things with it. And you just have to be careful with staffing because, you know, when you hire someone, and commit to that person for a long period of time.
Have we ever seen the trust lines funds go down?
Not that I've...
I don't think they
yeah,
have.
I don't think
I
they
haven't seen it go down.
Not that they couldn't.
Years.
Right.
You know, if there was a stock market crash, it's not all real estate now. They do have a significant investment portfolio. There could be one increase mathematically.
Those are considerations for your council. And also just on the note of salaries, you know, making sure that the person who's employed through trust lines funds also communicate that their salary comes from there too. So that's something that I consider as a council as you move. A couple things, and this is really just for when you guys start writing your plans, but each part of the plan is really an important part of communicating what you want your students to achieve in one academic year, but also what things you're going to put in place. So you as a council are going to identify those different academic areas. We do have priority areas like math, ULA, science, graduation rates, and college career readiness. Those last two being available to our secondary schools. But you also have other secondary areas that can be addressed through your trust lines plan, right? Those things like CTE, things like health, or things like reading and social studies, those can also be addressed through your plan as secondary academic areas. If you do need extra supports on that topic of academic area, we do have a guide there that kind of outlines, you know, the different academic areas and also some tips on how you can formulate those goals to fit program requirements. As a council, you are going to be creating goals after you identify those academic areas. And really what you're doing is answering the question, what are the things that we want our students to achieve in one academic year? Principals will be getting more communication about this, but I just want to make a note about it is when we do a goal statement, just making sure you have these four major parts. One is your academic area, so what area you're addressing. Also, what specific student population, so is it going to be all students? Is it 8th grade students? Is it 7th grade students? Identifying the achievement benchmark, right, so 75% of students are going to achieve this goal. You should have an expected outcome. You should also have assessment tool, so what's going to be used to measure that goal there. We do have a resource on our page that has one, this formula, but also example goals. I've also updated our website to have example plans, so you as an elementary school teacher or a high school teacher or a middle school principal have that example plan for you. All right. That was 5 minutes ran by very quickly. In terms of measurements, one thing to kind of keep in mind is making sure that the measurement is tied to that academic area. So if you're measuring reading literacy, making sure that measurement is actually tied to it. One of the common reasons why I might send a plan back from other districts is, one, there's a mismatch between academic area and measurement. This is something to kind of keep in mind as you're writing questions. One thing I do want to highlight is this part, because this is one of the number one questions I get in trainings, is what's allowable, what's unallowable. And I usually put my beginning statement up here because I think it helps guide that conversation. Right? So as a principal, you can use this to kind of guide the conversation on what we're going to use the funds for by asking, does it enhance classroom instruction, and does it actually have a direct impact on academic achievement? Right? If you can answer yes to both of those, that's probably an allowable expense, right? And so these things, like you can use trust funds towards addressing attendance issues as long as it's tied to an academic area, books and technology and supplies, we talked about salaries and benefits. All those things are easy connections back to an academic area or classroom instruction, whereas things like these, building construction or office accreditation or facility costs, those things are harder to tie to classroom instruction. One thing to highlight too are these two areas. These are actually both updates in program rule. So this is something as a board member to kind of keep in mind, is that there are policy updates and definitions for food as well as furniture. And so we just want to make sure that that's on your radar as well as you are addressing and approving those plans. 5 minutes was going so quick, that's crazy. Couple things too. One update that happened last year, I do want to highlight for this year too, is your student incentives limit has gone up from $2 per student per plan to $4 per student per plan. So making sure that you guys are aware of that change. Okay. I'm going to save backup plans, and I'm going to make this a plug for my Canvas course. If you have questions about plan writing, there's a whole section on plan writing just devoted to that. Principals, I recommend you guys look at that slide and make sure that you're seeing those resources as well as those requirements there. Great. I do want to leave it up to questions. So with the remaining 2 minutes that I have here, are there questions from the group that I can address while I'm here? I just seem to run out every time with you guys. I apologize. Yeah. So this is my like first training every year, so it's always kind of the whole deal of it. I think last year I had you guys running around scanning QR codes. And I was like, it's not gonna work. So I'm gonna leave my contact information up here in just a second. There we go. So that's me. We also have our group email, so if you prefer to talk to someone else that's not me and you are getting tired of my voice, feel free to email them. But I'm also available for consultations and just whatever questions you guys have.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Marcus, for that training, and thanks everyone for being here, and we'll have a 2-minute recess break, and then we'll begin our regular board meeting, and you're welcome to stay, but certainly not required.